Hey, this is Chris Manning from Lockdown Cavs. On today's show, Evan Damrell and I are breaking down the Dylan Windler injury and what the Cavs have to say about his status going forward, and then answering a bunch of your questions. Again, we are recording this before the Cavs play the Lakers. We'll be recapping those games later on this week because those games are late and Evan and I need to get sleep. But without further ado, here's today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, Dylan Windler out for the rest of the season, according to the Cavs, due to ongoing issues with his stress reaction in his left lower leg. What are your initial thoughts on this news that came just minutes before we started recording here on Monday, January 13th?
It's just a bummer overall. I'm sure, as you know, and like as people who follow me on, I have a bit of like a relationship with Dylan on and off the court, and just kind of like we'll check up on him every now and then, ask him how the recovery was going. And I think I talked to him a few weeks ago, and this is back when he was getting ready to make his debut with the Charge, and he said like, oh, all signs are pointing in the right direction. I think I'm going to be 100% soon, you know, just normal float talk. But he's like, I'm just really, really, really wanting to get back out there and play. And you know, it just stinks, but stress reactions are super duper tricky when it comes to these type of things. And I'd rather the Cavs play it safe with Windler, especially if they view him as a rotation piece going forward. But definitely sucks because I think he was one of the rookies I was definitely most forward to watching. But his technical rookie season will be next year, and he'll be 24 years old, if I'm remembering this correctly. So that, you know, kind of limits him a little bit going forward in terms of development. But I don't know. I feel bad for him. He's a good kid, and he definitely would have brought a fun wrinkle to the Cavs, especially in a position of need. And just hope he makes a full recovery and bounces back. What about you? What are your thoughts on the whole injury situation?
Yeah, I think I agree with all that. I think from one angle, I think from just a pure practical standpoint, this makes me a little – like this wasn't a top three thing I was looking forward to seeing the rest of the year, but maybe probably top five, because I think if you put Windler in the rotation – and I think his ability to just shoot, and that being a thing, I think he will be able to do from day one. And it's why the Cavs drafted him, I think, in the first place. That's going to suck not having that on the rotation. I liked thinking about conceptually us getting into March after the trade deadline or late February or whatever, and seeing lineups where it's, you know, one, they're playing one of Sexton or Garland, and then it's like a bunch of longer guys. And that's like the Cavs getting in with the modern times. And for them to like actually do that, they need Dylan Windler. Like they need Windler to be in there to be the guy who kind of can help unlock some of those. Without him, without KPJ, obviously for the next like 6 weeks or so, you know, things get a little dicey. I think you're going to see McKinney. I think you'll see some other guys. You know, maybe trades will happen. It'll bring in wings, whatever. Yeah. But I do think this just kind of is a ding to what the Cavs can do. And I also think like if you just think about what the Cavs are trying to do this year, I know Beeline was a big Windler fan. From everything I understand, like Beeline was raving about him in camp, was thrilled with kind of how he was picking up the game. I think he liked having kind of an older rookie that he could bring in. But you know, I think it is right to be cautious. This is from all accounts like something that is unexpected in Windler's injury history. And now he'll basically get to do a redo on his rookie year next year. Again, like this was a guy that was the guy. It's funny that the guy who played in summer league is the guy who's not going to play like NBA games. It's not funny. That's the wrong word for it. It's ironic, I guess. But yeah, like KPJ and Garland had their own surgeries. Windler comes in, you know, the opposite of them in that regard. And now he's not going to play at all this year. Sucks. And I think for the Cavs, like that's the kind of guy you would want to be healthy, and hopefully would have been healthy like soon, just because he'd be a fun way to kind of splice up your rotation with someone who's going to matter for you going forward and not like one of these guys who's probably not on the team next year. So, and to me, and just for empathetically as a human being, like I'm sure he's going, like, this is probably just like the absolute biggest bummer he possibly could have.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think at the NBA level, if you're not a competitor, you're not going to make it very long in this league. And by all accounts, from what I've heard about Dylan just in training camp and the limited time he's been able to work out with the team and practice with them and just exposure, like he just wanted to get out there and show that he's a part of it. Because, I mean, he went to Belmont, which is a pretty small school, and was a late first round pick, but you know, that feels like you need to put a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, prove that he belongs. But I actually have a question for you, and this is from a piece in The Athletic from a while ago. They noted that Beilein held rigorous two-a-day practices during Summer League, and he admitted this was a mistake. And I don't know if they're saying this was the cause of it, but the piece itself linked to the fact that Darius Garland suffered a foot injury during training camp, and then Windler had a stress reaction on his left leg from those summer workouts. Do you think this is going to make Beilein kind of change his thought process going forward, I hope?
I think that is a thing that could be likely. It's funny because, like, I distinctly remember being at the Cavs facility in Independence, and Kevin Love was like sweaty as hell, still looking very GQ because he's Kevin Love, but was like talking about how much he liked the practices, and like that contrary to what we sort of know now, like that was probably him just like playing good, kind of good guy in that situation. You know, I think that would – I would guess that that would be one of the things. I think that when he gets – if it does not get asked by people that are currently with the team on this road trip, I would be curious to know if he – when he looks back at this and he thinks about some of the stuff that went wrong, you know, I wonder if that is something that he's already marking down for next training camp. It's like, okay, yeah. This is something I'm going to change. We're not going to do these kind of long strenuous practices. This is a longer season. You know, I don't have the luxury of playing like, was it like 40 something games in college or whatever it ends up being with the tournament. Like, we're playing double that. It's a much more compressed schedule, more travel, all that. So I do wonder if that is something for him that will change next year. And I'll be curious to see like what the Cavs kind of like. It'll be really interesting now, I think, to see how the Cavs will approach Summer League next year. You know, they're one of the teams that has not necessarily like always, like they didn't play Colin Sexton. I don't think he played this year. You know,
he played his rookie season and he did not play this year. Yeah.
Right. I don't, you're obviously not going to see him next year. You're not going to see Jetty next year. You know, I think KPJ, it would make a lot of sense for him to play next year, but as you know, I don't know about Garland. KPJ, like, I think should play. He's so young. I don't really see the downside, but the Cavs are a team that I could see them like not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, Windler would be a guy that I think would make sense to play if he's healthy, but maybe they're going to be uber cautious with him, but that'll be kind of one of the interesting storylines to follow next year. Any final Windler thoughts here?
I feel bad for him, I really do, and as a fan of this team, I wish he could see this team at 100% full strength, because you and I have been talking about this for a little while now. Like, the way the injuries, and Dante Exum is back tonight against the Lakers after being out with, I think, the flu. He was sick. And
he was very sick from all accounts. Like, was like just, I don't know how. There's the game he had where he scored like a lot of points. Like, apparently he was just like it was kind of crazy that he played at all in that one. So
okay, we finally have a flu game in Cavs history. That's something good to brag about. But
and unless, you know, on that lesser schedule, take it where you can get it.
Yeah, it's not a rebuild; it's a renaissance. So, this would have been a perfect opportunity, and, you know, after Windler made his debut in Canton, it was a lot of radio silence on the Cavs end and just kind of wondering what was going on. It's a bit up in the air. And if you ask, you kind of got the, oh, yeah, he's doing all right. Hopefully he can get back there soon, like kind of non-answers. And, you know, this just – I view this as like one of the perfect opportunities to slowly integrate Dylan into the Cavs rotation. And, you know, like we talked about, like some of these veteran guys – are starting to lose their minutes to these younger guys. This is just another one of those younger guys that would come in and soak up some of those minutes, because he at least is expected to be a part of Cleveland's rotation going forward. And it just kind of sucks because it's a setback in his development, the team's development. And hopefully, you know, it's just been nothing but setbacks ever since this leg injury first happened. And hopefully just, you know, after this, because according to the Cavs, he's having surgery on January 21st. And after that, he has a full recovery and he's totally healthy, and knocking on wood for him that this is just the last of it, and that his rookie year next year is what we're hoping this year would be. I guess those are just my final thoughts on the whole Windler situation.
Yeah, I think that's right. The other thing that happened news-wise today is the Cavs officially waived Levi Randolph. He was on a two-way deal. The deadline to sign players to new two-way deals is going to be Wednesday the 15th. You know, I would expect the Cavs to do something. I can't quite wrap my mind around like why they went through all this with Randolph. Mm-hmm. There's probably some reason to that for that. So
maybe think Ivan Rabb getting waived today might have something to do with it.
Yeah, like something like that. But I also, I mean, just like the semantics of like signing Levi Randolph to a two-way deal in the first place was like, why? You know, I don't think he was going to matter that much anyway. But that happened. I would like to see what the Cavs do with that. I would just hope they, I think a wing or just some like mildly interesting young guy is kind of what I would do with that. Maybe, I mean, like someone, I mean, it's not the guy I think they'll go after, but like someone like Marquise Chris would kind of be the guy and maybe like burn a contract on that for the rest of the year. Like, why not, you know?
Sorry, I laughed. Just the thought of the reunion with Marquise Chris again after
coming
home.
Let's go.
You can get us some intel on how bad Golden State is, and so what we know to do.
Yeah, give me quotes. So. I'm here for the quote. Yes. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be back to talk about some of your mailbag questions. We got a ton of great ones. Not going to get to all of them today, but we are going to explain what our plan is going forward for that right after this break. All right, Evan, we're back. Cavs questions abound here. Got a bunch from Twitter, a bunch from Reddit, a couple from email. We got so many questions, and considering I never was able to get the quantity of questions I was looking for in the past, I basically just am attributing this to Evan being much more liked on Twitter than me, which is a good thing. We need someone that doesn't just like annoy people all the time on the interwebs. But what we're going to do is on this show, we're going to get through maybe two of these in these next two segments and then maybe answer a couple more later this week. We'll do a whole Reddit one. So people on Reddit that are listening know that we're going to get to them and we'll answer them in the context of the moments and not kind of when you ask them. But first question, Evan, why don't you kind of bring up this first question and we'll dive in here.
This is from SportsNom on Twitter, who is a great follow if you guys haven't followed him yet, by the way. But he asked us, how do we feel about Darius Garland's floater? It seemed like early in the year people were worried about it, and maybe he was just relying on it a bit too much. And now he's hitting a ton of them, and it looks like other little shots in the lane. I guess just what Nam is wondering is, like, how do we feel about Darius becoming comfortable with his floater and just going forward? His just overall comfort level. And I guess if I can start if you want, unless you want to take the... I've said this for a while now, and I've been on the record on a few different platforms, Twitter, Forbes, this podcast, the Inferior Chasedown podcast. I'm firmly in the camp that Garland did need a lot of time to transition from essentially playing high school level basketball to low D1 of college competition, where he only played 5 games, to NBA level basketball where he's playing grown men. And Darius Garland's 6'1", I think 185 to 190 pounds. So he's obviously small. And he's a kid playing against grown men, like I just said. And I think now that he has had enough time under his belt, we're starting to finally see him turn a corner a bit on this. And like the floater wasn't falling at first, a lot like his 3-pointers weren't falling at first, and a lot like it looked like he was making the smart reads but wasn't completely connecting on them right away. It's just like we're watching the evolution of his game and his overall just comfort level, just acclimating to the NBA game. And then, you know, as his confidence continues to grow on this front, it's only just going to continue to flourish in other facets of his game as well. And, you know, I was a little shaky when the Cavs drafted him this summer. And when they did the intro press conference for him, John Beilein was saying, like, oh, he was shooting it from Nashville, blah, blah, blah. Like, he wasn't missing a single shot. And, like, you know, that's a red flag for me when you start hyping up a guy in a last-minute workout hitting shots in an open gym. But I'm starting to see a little bit why the Cavs were so intrigued by him at 5th overall in terms of being a prospect. And I think him getting the green light to be the guy for the Cavs a lot in these situations definitely helps them in terms of his development and what they're looking for him going forward. And like Nam pointed out, his floater is starting to become a facet of his game, and I think it's just a continuous evolution of him just getting comfortable, and I think we're finally going to see him start to unlock a little bit in terms of his offensive skill set through the remainder of his rookie season.
I don't have a huge, huge problem with the floater. I do think it was something he was relying on too much at the start. I do think, you know, he's not a very strong guy right now, so like when he does throw that, if he gets kind of thrown off of his kind of trajectory in any way, like it is a shot that I think it's susceptible to him being kind of having it busted. I do think you're seeing him make more reads out of that now. There's the pass that I mentioned on our show yesterday where he found Tristan Thompson cut dunking basically because they ran like this little weird action where like Jokic came up and Garland and instantly sort of knew that Thompson's gonna go for a lob. That's good stuff. According to NBA.com's stats page, to look at the numbers on these shots. So on driving, on a floating jump shot, he's 7 of 18 on the year. What they classify as a floating jump shot, he's 7 of 18 for the year, 38.9%. On a driving floating jump shot, which is kind of the most common one you're seeing him take at 52 attempts, he's shooting 48.1%. And then on 20 attempts on driving floating bank jump shots, which isn't quite the same thing, but whatever, 55%. So those aren't like, you know, bad numbers. I haven't done like the full deep dive on like what a good percentage on a floater is, or kind of poked around with people that can kind of give me a number and what they would say makes this like an efficient shot. That I think would be a really good question for like a front office analytics person that would kind of deem what they would deem, you know, efficient and or valuable or whatnot. I do think it'll be a good tool for him to have. I do think it is something he can't rely on too much. I would like to see him eventually be a guy who's going to take things closer to the rack, draw fouls, get to the free throw line. That's just going to be a more efficient play. But I don't think the floater I could get if why it would be maddening. I do think it is like a good tool for him to have, but I think it's something Nam hinted in his question. As it progresses and it unlocks other stuff, I think that's kind of what we're looking for here.
He caught me, you know, sipping water there. I agree with you. And, you know, before we jump to the next question, because we don't want to ignore everybody, just special thanks again to Nam for the question. Chris and I are a big fan of it, and we actually, like, wanted to lead the mailbag with it. But, like I said, everyone give him a follow, and specifically get in his mentions and tell him, since he's a big football fan, that Ryan Tannehill only counts for $1.85 million against the Titans cap this year, while Tannehill instead counts for $11.85 million against the Dolphins cap. If you know Nam personally, you know why I'm having you say this, but just a quick segue. And let's jump into the next question, Chris, because I just have to, you know, rub a little salt in the wound with him.
Yeah, that's fair. Nam, though, come on, Lockdown Caps. Okay, this is from S_Cucci on Twitter. Do you guys think it's easier for Sexton to decide to play a more off-ball role in offense if he sees Garland has it cooking? I have not checked the stats on this, but it feels like Sexton knows Garland should be initiating more when he's playing well. Well, I guess number one, I don't know if there's a stat that like allows us to like calculate that specific thing. I don't think there's like a stat that it's like when Garland's, I don't know if there is one, and I'm just like an idiot. Please, like, someone like get in my mentions. This is like the one time I will suggest you get into my mentions and do that. But to think about Sexton, one of the things that I think was a very difficult thing for him coming from college was just playing off ball. He did it like under 100 possessions total in a season in Alabama. It was not something he did. Looking at his shot frequency this year on the NBA stats page, he's a much better like 3-point shooter on catch and shoot. So on 1.9 catch and shoot attempts per game, he's at 38.9%. That's for him. That's higher than his season average right now of 31.5. And then on pull-ups, he's at 23.5% on 1.3 attempts per game. I don't like, this is not really quite answering this question. I think Sexton is a guy that like the best, I would just say this, the best version of him is going to be a guy that can be sort of like Lou Will, who can create when he needs to do some stuff when he needs to, but he also like is going to know to play off ball when it's a good chance for him to do so. And it's something that I think he's gotten better at as it's gone on. And it's, you know, right now pull-ups overall and shots, pull-ups overall, like are taking up a pretty big chunk of his shots. I like to say change a little bit cause it's just sometimes some wacky shots, but the catch and shoot threes is a thing that I think is indicative that he does have some sort of clue on what to do in those kind of scenarios.
Yeah, actually that's the points he made just kind of segue well into what I was trying to get at. The tandem of Sexton and Garland, and this question in itself is actually like my biggest problem with the tandem in itself. Sexton's by all count is a score first guard at this point in his young career. And maybe the next facet of his game unlocking is definitely more handling off ball duties and letting Garland more so take the floor here. But for the foreseeable future, at least this season, I don't see that happening. And like in that last game Cleveland played against Denver, when both of them were on, that's great. And you can make this tandem easily work because Garland had 8 assists. He was moving the ball, scored 18 points, was overall just had a great night. Sexton was the team's leading scorer. And I think it's great that those two are developing a chemistry. But the problem is when Darius has an off night, he and Colin, you know, Well, actually, let me flip that back. If Darius is having a solid night and Colin isn't, it can negate Darius having a good night, because I don't think Colin's seen a shot attempt he's disliked yet, because many of times when I go to games to cover, people will like bring up the question like, hey, you had a pretty off shooting night, like what's your thought process? And he always just says, you know, I just don't remember the bad shots, I just remember the good ones. And I like think to myself, I'm like, buddy, you missed a lot of shots tonight, so you're forgetting a lot of shots out there. But it's just like, it's fine, but I feel like it's also a disservice on the Cavs part to keep playing them together so long, especially if, like we just touched on, Darius Garland's starting to look a lot more comfortable functioning as a lead guard for Cleveland's offense, and it can hamstring a little bit of that development. And, you know, if the Cavs want to commit to Garland going forward as a team's as the lead point guard, and I think Sexton's properly utilized, like you said, off the ball as more of a Lou Will role in the six-man position, and I think that's something I've been advocating for a while ever since I've come on as your co-host, and I'm okay with it. Like I said, having chemistry between these two is great, but I feel like until Colin can unlock that facet of his game, it's just going to kind of spiral out of control a little bit, because Sexton is the team's leading scorer for a reason, but also he looks like he's completely lost in the weeds when he just starts to drive down the lane with reckless abandon and then ignores open teammates and results in the frustration of people in the stands and people on the court. So I don't know. I think that's the next part of Colin's game, especially if Cleveland wants to keep him here for the foreseeable future and make this tandem of these two work together for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think feels notable to me that the Cavs, a lot of the time, like Sexton is put off ball before he can even bring up the ball. Like they're very sort of aware of that. And then they go from there, and Garland is sort of the one they're setting that up. Like that is an intentional thing that Cavs are doing there. So that's just what they're doing. Okay. One last break, and then we're coming back to answer a couple more mailbag questions. So stay tuned for more Lockdown Cavs. All right, we're back. First question here in our last segment comes from at JamesEPyle27 on Twitter. This question is, and Evan, you take this one first. Beeline was hired to develop the young players. Curious to know, A, what his plan is for each, especially the guards, and B, how's that going halfway through the first season?
Well, I don't know 100% what the contingent plan right now is for the Cavs, because, you know, they're still a bit in that talent acquisition phase of this renaissance period. And I want to believe that the thought process is Beilein wants to develop Garland into the lead guard of the future, help Colin round out his game, at least offensively. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit with, you know, maybe that anomaly of 3-point shooting and just like maintaining confidence in Colin as both a shooter and a scorer. Like Beilein hasn't given him the hook in that regard. And then just finally with Kevin Porter, at least just help build and develop upon his raw talent. And, you know, the Cavs definitely dodged a bullet in that regard as well, because we were worried when we first touched on it when he went down with that knee injury that this was a season-ending injury that could possibly implicate KPJ's development going into the summer. And I just think at this point, the Cavs are kind of seeing what they have, at least going forward through this young season. And at the same time, Beilein's also a rookie head coach, and he's transitioning from coaching at the high school and majority of his time collegiate level to NBA level basketball. And, you know, there's a bit of a learning curve as we're starting to learn with just how some veterans and players are just a little unhappy on how he manages things and how he coaches. And I think that's also where he's trying to grow as well. So like those two facets of his hiring is player development, which I think I'll jump into point B in a second with this, but more so he's still learning the game on the fly, and the Cavs really aren't in a position to like say like, all right, well, this is the plan we're doing with this player. This is the plan we have with this player. This is the plan we have with X, Y, Z, and so on. You just kind of figure out what you have, figure out who's going to be here long-term, especially after the trade deadline, and then you start moving forward from there. And I guess in terms of how the development's going at this point in the season, I think it's pretty par for the course. You and I are both pretty clear that, and I think the majority of Cavs Twitter and people who cover this team would say Kevin Porter has been by far Cleveland's best rookie, just because we didn't know what 100% to expect with him coming out of Southern California. And it's just been a lot of fun to watch him grow and develop. And the setback he had with his injury sucks, but thankfully it's only through at least possibly the All-Star break. If I was a betting man, I'd say it after the All-Star break, he'll be back. But, you know, Sexton is turning the corner a bit offensively. Like I said early, just a minute ago, he had that anomaly of from three-point range where things definitely just look tough and you're like, oh no, his shot's completely abandoned him. Like, he's falling apart out there. And, you know, it's starting to look, it's starting to come back. He's starting to show confidence in his three-pointer again. And, you know, he's also Cleveland's leading scorer, which says a lot considering, you know, you have Kevin Love, who may not be an all-star anymore, but he's still Cleveland's best player. And if you have a sophomore guard who, albeit is ball dominant and likes to shoot it as much as he can, if he's becoming more and more efficient and more rounded out, I think that's Bayline's next step with him. And then just to jump, touch back on it again, because we've already talked enough about Garland, it's just he's been turning the corner as well, and we're starting to see why the Cavs viewed him so highly, fifth overall. And I'm kind of happy to see where they're at. Like we touched on at the beginning of the podcast, it definitely sucks with the Dylan Windler news, because he's that last piece for at least young core guys that have been here since the beginning of the year. And it's just tough not to see him out there developing either. But so far, I can't say I'm too upset. Everything kind of feels like where it should be for a team that has a bunch of 19, 20, and 21-year-olds getting the lion's share of minutes. And I don't know, you just kind of see where things are at, maybe not this year, but maybe a year or two from now, when Sexton is further along in his career, and Garland and Porter and Windler and even Jetty and even Nance as well, if you want to lump Larry a little bit into that younger, yeah, quote-unquote foundation. That's where you kind of really have to start to say, like, is he actually doing what he was hired for? Because, like, right now, but I think it's fine. And I don't know, I guess, what are your thought process on the whole Bayline hire and how things have been going with him?
I don't think I have anything different. I would just say, like, I think when we think about plans and stuff, I think this is true for life and for players and whatever. None of these things are going to go ever as planned. Like, I think, you know, I think the Windler injury, like, certainly probably sped up the KPJ timeline up a little bit, but that certainly worked out up until the injury. I think the Garland stuff, they knew it was going to take some time. These are all kind of inflow things. And I think it'll be one of those things once we get to the All-Star break, kind of looking at how some trends that have changed, see what Bealine has said. I think some of these guys have, like, I do think there have been improvements, and that is, I think, maybe they're maybe not what we expected, and the whole situation still is a little weird, but I do think there has been improvements. I do think, you know, it's not like, you know, I think for the caliber of talent and they're kind of the way they enter the league, I think everything is about sort of, I think, pretty solid. I don't have, like, any major complaints, but I think we'll kind of, it's what Bealine does in college is just, it was never going to be perfectly transferable to the NBA, mm-hmm, just based on roster construction and all that stuff. So we'll see what it looks like going forward post trade deadline and stuff. But you know, that I don't think it's been like he's done a bad job by any means. I think he's done a largely good job in that regard. And I'm curious, mm-hmm, to see kind of what the next steps are. Okay. Next question. Second to last one for today from Ty Windish comes from the host of the Eurostep podcast, a 2 or 3 time guest of this show. After watching him play a few games, what are your short-term and long-term thoughts about Dante Exum? I'll just say, Evan, I think Exum in the short term provides some just needed ball handling, some needed passing, some defense and length. Certainly, I think gives you another long body that without KPJ and Windler right now, that makes me feel like the Cavs can at least be a little bit bigger in those positions. I think that's a good change for them. Mm-hmm. And I'll say long term, like, I don't pretend to know if, like, his 3-point shooting will hold up. I would doubt it would, or if he's like a long-term fit with the for this roster. But I think when you were trading Jordan Clarkson and getting the picks back and going to take on a guy like this, is the kind of younger guy I'm good with rolling the dice on. It's more interesting to me than like taking on a Hassan Whiteside and trying to make that work, or like something in that vein. This is just the kind of guy that I think stylistically could fit with this team. He's 24. He's clearly athletic. I've liked the early returns, and if he keeps it up, like there's definitely, I think, a future where he can be someone that could stay with the Cavs beyond next season. I don't think that's like the most unreal. I don't know. Like, I think it's too early for us to know that, but I don't think it's like out of the question by any means. If they had like acquired like a pure just salary match and expiring contract.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think it's funny you mentioned earlier in the pod, we talked about the Cavs maybe kicking the tires on Marquese Chriss and just bringing him back for the remainder of the year. Dante Exum kind of feels in a similar vein to that, and I said it before, but injuries have definitely set him back a lot in his career, and I think Cleveland is a perfect situation for him just to kind of find his footing again in the NBA. And like you said, he is a large body who can provide defense, especially on the perimeter, and passing, and then, you know, he can stroke it a little bit, albeit it's not the prettiest shot at all. But, you know, the Cavs are a team that is not vying for the playoffs this year, and Exum is still a young prospect. I mean, he's been in the league for a little while now, but it's still somebody the Cavs can kick the tires on and kind of see what they have. And you and I have talked about this a little bit, but I think the Cavs are going to start seeding more of Matthew Dellavedova's minutes to Brandon Knight, and now that Exum is supposed to be back tonight against the Lakers, I think he will soak up the last of Delly's minutes. And with the KPJ injury and the Wendell injury, like you said, he has the size to play the three and at least defend them. And I think that's definitely something of use as well. And I think he's also just a good foil to counterbalance what Garland and Sexton are at right now in terms defensively, because neither of them are very good defenders and they're both small for their position. Like, Exum is a good counterbalance to that as well. And also, Garland is turning the corner on playmaking, but Sexton, you know, is anemic to it at this point, and Exum kind of helps with the move the ball, at least in that regard as well, and, you know, makes that second unit that you and I are such big fans of a lot more fun and dynamic. And it's like, in the short term, like, you know, kick the tires, see what you got. And I'm pleasantly surprised at the return so far. I wasn't expecting a ton, especially after my talk with Ben Dowson when he was on Locked On Cavs with me. And but long term, you know, he's, like you said, he's 24 years old. He's not super duper expensive next year. I think his stats aren't going to be mind-boggling, so I don't think he's going to command like a massive extension if he were looking to stay with Cleveland long-term. And, you know, that's totally fine by me if you have a young guard who is relatively close in age to your two other guards on your roster that are key parts of your rotation, at least in the point guard position. You know, just have a good steady rotation and stable between those three, and it's not a bad problem to have going forward. And I'm okay with Dante Exum staying here long-term, just, you know, as long as he can stay healthy and just keep executing like he has. But he's been a lot of fun so far to watch. And, you know, maybe that's just, you know, in the perspective of the fact that the Cavs aren't very good right now. And so you kind of have to have small silver lining victories and find some type of gleam in losing. So, you know, Dante Exum's a good feel-good story if he's able to kind of get his career back on track. And if he stays in Cleveland long-term after he does get it back on track, awesome. If it just cost Jordan Clarkson and got the Cavs a couple picks with it, even better. So, no, I'm definitely interested to see what we have going forward with Exum. Like we talked about, this flu of his apparently was pretty nasty, and it's kind of just held him back a little bit, but I'm excited to see what he has, especially with this opportunity to get even more time in the rotation, just to see what Cleveland has going forward. And, like, if it doesn't work out, you know, he's making $9.6 million off the top of my head next season. That's a pretty easy contract to move in terms of picking up more salary picks as well down the line. So it sets Cleveland up nicely, because if it doesn't work, you can just probably flip him pretty easily either over the summer or leading up to next year's deadline.
Yep. Okay. Last question for today comes from Billy O'Rourian via email. Assuming Dylan Windler is not a figment of our collective imagination when day returns, well, that's next year. What is your wish list of young bigs to potentially pair post Kevin Love trade with Garland, Sexton, Osmond, Windler, and KPJ? Evan, I'm just going to say this. I think if you could get Zach Collins back, I'm very down for that. But if I'm looking at the draft and I'm thinking about guys that I would particularly be interested in, I'm going to mispronounce his name, but it's Onyeka Okongwu. I think it's, I'm definitely mispronouncing that, but he's 6'9".
Is that the guy Trevor Magnotti's hyping up?
Yes. Jackson Frank also has him, like, his number one prospect right now.
Shout out to both of those guys.
Yeah, they're both great guys.
Educate me very much on the draft, and I act like I'm an expert after I talk to them. So yeah,
Trevor will be back on here very soon as a little tease. But this guy's a 6'9", 245-pound big. He does stuff that, like, at Cosmos on Twitter was like, this is sort of Bam Adebayo-esque. Just give me that. That is what I want. You know, I think if you rolled into next year and it was like Tristan plus Nance plus your younger big, I'd be very down for that. You know, whether it be a Collins, be it, you know, maybe it's Collins. Like, I don't, you know, I don't, like, doesn't feel like the Kevin to Portland thing's happening as of right now. But I think drafting a big, if it's like the guy, I'm not going to say his name again because I don't want to mispronounce it. That's the kind of guy that I'm looking at. That's the type of big who could pass, who can run the floor, play some defense. I'm not like super in on the James Wiseman experience from what the people that are better drafts up to me tell me.
No, I would agree with that. I'm trying. I couldn't find out an actual phonetic pronunciation, but no, I agree. If Trevor was like a used car salesman, I think he'd be like the best at his job, at least in terms of the basketball community. Because whenever
he's too moral to be a used car salesman.
But you know what I mean? Like last year, he went on the chase down and he's talked to me privately about Jarrett Culver and how like high he was on him for the Cavs. And I was all in on Jarrett Culver leading up to the NBA draft. And, you know, Okongwu, I'm probably butchering it. No, Trevor's by all accounts said like that's like the perfect kind of big man that the Cavs could use just as a guy who can do a little bit of everything. And I'm looking at his, at least Tankathon's a reliable source to me because I trust their statistic. Like his stat strengths, he's good at blocks, PER, his field goal percentage is solid, his offensive rebounding and defensive rating and win shares and all this other stuff like is great. And his only negatives right now are his assist to turnover ratio, his assist percentage uses, and his projected NBA 3-point percentage. But all the pros he brings to the table kind of counterbalances that. And like you said, if the Cavs, and you and I both are advocates of them extending Tristan Thompson at this point, if the Cavs roll in next season with Larry Nance at the starting four, Tristan Thompson as the starting center, you have Okongwu coming off the bench and growing in development. He's only 19 years old, and by the time he's drafted, he'll be 19 and a half years old. So, oh my God, he was born in 2000. It's just, sorry. We're getting up there. I found gray in my beard today. So it's just going forward, like, I'm fine with that. And I agree with you. I don't know if Kevin Love to Portland's really a thing anymore. And from what I've kind of read, I feel like Zach Collins might be off the table in those trade talks too. And I feel like Zach Collins is the trade starter for me to get Kevin Love to come to Portland, especially if you're bringing back Hassan Whiteside, who, by all accounts,
expiring.
He's expiring, but
you buy him out immediately, I think.
I don't think he's on the roster. That's fair. Maybe, I mean, if they brought in Kent Bazemore instead, like, keep Kent around. He seems like a good locker room guy to have. But I don't know if Kevin to Portland's really going to happen. And I know, like, I've said a few times, I feel like the Cavs and Kevin Love are on a collision course that is going to get him out of here by the deadline. But if that doesn't happen, it opens up the market considerably this summer as well. And we'll kind of see where the chips fall then. But no, if the Cavs were able to pry Zach Collins out of Portland, that's totally fine by me too, because he could start over Larry Nance at that point. Because I think Larry Nance is also better utilized as more of a high energy jack of all trades, master of none, big off the bench for Cleveland, because the Cavs are synonymous with players like that. And but I guess we'll see. If that's just to answer the question, a player like Zach Collins would be great, but Okongwu would be pretty awesome as well. And haven't heard much about Precious Achiuwa, who Tankathon has at 16th overall in terms of just their just overall mock draft going to the Magic. And he seems like, you know, a diet version of what Okongwu provides, and he's just a year older. But it's just, you know, I think this year's draft class is going to have a lot of just solid overall players and maybe nothing that's going to be as good as Kevin Love. And that's totally fine if you're planning on segueing more towards having a guard dominant offense based on Cleveland's last two draft classes. And no, I'm definitely interested to see what they have planned. But, you know, I think it's just that kind of like rotation. Like you said, if it's like you get a Bam Adebayo out of this, you take that and you walk away every day completely happy with that, because I'm a big advocate of Bam Adebayo and what he's doing in Miami.
Yeah, he'd be great. If you're looking at like I would just say I would not be wanting to invest a lot of draft capital in a center if it's not that guy. If you want to look at like lower second round guys like John Teske, who played for Beeline at Michigan, fits what Beeline wants out of centers, could be an option. Trevor thinks he's like a fringe NBA guy, so that kind of is an option as well. And we've discussed in the past, you know, Drummond, which seems unlikely at this point, but or Montrezl Harrell, who's certainly a good offensive fit, a bad defensive player, but there's some stuff like that you could do. Okay, that's going to be it for today's show. Again, we're going to be back tomorrow. No recaps of these games, but have a cool guest book that you'll know about at the beginning of the show tomorrow. I'm very, very excited about that one. So stay tuned for that. And again, more mailbag questions in the future. We got all of these great ones you guys have submitted, and we're going to eventually get through all of them. So thank you again for doing that. This has been Locked on Cavaliers for Tuesday, January 14th.